Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Julie Levac. I am so excited to have Catherine Erskine and Nathaniel Draper here with me, and we are talking about Invisible Man. Guys, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Yeah. Hi, you're very welcome.
Invisible Man was written and directed by Lee, I'm going to say Wannell. If I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize, but we've got Elizabeth Moss, Oliver Jackson Cohen, Harriet Dyer, and Aldis Hodge, among others. Incredible cast. So The Invisible Man was originally a novel by H.G. Wells, and it was also a film, I believe it was a film in the 1930s. It's set in modern times, and it follows Cecilia as she escapes an abusive relationship with Adrian. Adrian, who works with some form of optics technology, seemingly commits suicide, but continues to haunt Cecilia. So just as a heads up, guys, as usual, this podcast is totally open for spoilers. We're going to ruin all the fun stuff for you. Because of all this craziness happening in the world right now, I would encourage you not to go out to the theaters if you haven't already seen the film. In fact, I believe most of them will be closed anyway, but Universal is pushing up the digital release date of Invisible Man, so it should be available for you to rent online soon. So guys, why don't we just chat about our overall thoughts about the film? So Invisible Man, what did you guys think?
It was good. Yeah. It had the jump scares I wanted, and I went into it, I had told you earlier, Julie, very skeptical and worried because I had seen the adaptation of Hollow Man, and there were some scenes in there that actually made me walk out of the theater, and I was pleasantly surprised that this did not occur with this one as well.
I thought it was a really exceptional movie. There's a lot of things that I liked about it in terms of its story, its content, the style. I thought visually it was really, really well done. I liked the use of the wide framing. I thought it was really cool because you're at many points in the movie, you're looking all over the frame and you're looking for things to happen. And so it was just, there was a lot about it that just from a filmmaking perspective, I thought was done very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really well done. As a lot of you guys know, I am not a huge horror fan, but I actually really enjoyed this film. I mean, I could have done without the jump scares, but there weren't an excessive amount of them in there anyway. I think they did a really good job at making it seem tense when it needed to be, but they didn't overdo it. It was super well written, well acted, and I found it quite thought-provoking. I was impressed that there was like a strong and professional female lead. And despite being the victim of domestic violence and control, Cecilia was just a powerhouse. So I was really impressed with that. I thought the film was quite well paced as well. And I agree, you know, cinematically, it was really excellent. I thought the fight scenes as well. The fight scenes with the Invisible Man were incredible. They looked totally real to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'd love to see kind of like a behind the scenes showing of how they did that. Like, I'm sure it was with the green suits and everything, but it really was amazing. Like, we've come a long way technology-wise.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, as you were talking, that made me think of is it's interesting that they made this someone who's effectively not there. Like, I'm sure that for so much of the action of what they were filming, there was just, well, there wouldn't have been anybody there. And it was really just Elizabeth Moss who actually had to convince you through her performance that there was somebody there off screen when we can't see them, but to her it's real. And in the story actually is real. Spoiler.
Yeah. Elizabeth Moss is perfect for the thriller horror genre. Her face is so expressive. You can almost read her thoughts. She's so incredible. She does the same thing in Handmaid's Tale, and she does it in Invisible Man, and it really speaks to her acting ability. I just think she's brilliant.
What's interesting... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So what's interesting, you should mention Handmaid's Tale, because what's interesting with that is a lot of the way it's filmed also is very much... it's played off of her expression, and you don't actually get to see a lot of, at least in the earlier seasons, a lot of what the actual world is. And so a lot of it is actually through her responding to things that you actually fill in sort of what's happening. And so yeah, it would make sense that would then translate to a movie like this.
Absolutely.
I would agree with you. I feel like you just said it better than I did. I have fallen in love with Elizabeth Moss and her acting from The Handmaid's Tale. I was an avid watcher, and just to see her, it almost looked like she had the same like facial vibes and stuff in this movie, but she's just so good at seeming crazy, if that's a good thing to say, or, like, a mm-hmm. polite thing to say. Like, just her facial expressions alone, you can see the turmoil, and you want to believe her, but sometimes she just looks so crazy you can't.
Mm-hmm. But crazy, but also credible, too, at yes. the same time. It's a really fine line to walk.
I found that she played so many different roles in this film. You know, she was a strong professional woman, but then she also played a victim of domestic abuse, but then she also played that more psychotic role, and it's, again, just speaks to her brilliance. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I ditto.
So good. So let's dive into the domestic abuse aspect of the film. Adrian was obviously incredibly controlling of Cecilia. That first scene of them together was of his arm wrapped around her while they slept. And I thought that was sort of an interesting indication right off the bat. But Cecilia was a very smart person. She was able to sort of plan and execute her escape out of that very well-guarded fortress. But she was actually very broken down by the relationship with Adrian, and that emotional trauma sort of haunted her to the point where she was scared to go outside to get the mail for fear that he was going to find her. So oh, yeah. I know that the abusive relationship is at the heart of the entire film, but I'm just curious to know how you guys felt about the way that it was portrayed on screen. Do you think that they gave enough respect to Cecilia as the survivor of abuse?
I think they did, in the sense that, like, in the field that I work in, we see a lot of this, and it wasn't overly done. A lot of it, a lot of movies, you can see a lot of the physical abuse aspects in relationships, but this seemed to be not just that, but also really mentally and emotionally abusive, to the point where it really contributed to her own self-doubt when she knew that he was around, because she thought, like, am I crazy? He has gotten into my head so much. I am a professional. I am strong. I do have support. But this is just so ingrained in me now that even I'm doubting myself. And I think that speaks to hugely what women go through in an emotional or verbally abusive home.
Going to your point on the sort of the psychological trauma, for me, when I was watching it, the thing that I thought it did a really good job of capturing was the sort of the mental state of someone who's being gaslighted.
Yeah.
Where you're trying to, it's a question of, like, am I crazy? Is what I think actually happening really what's happening to me? And to make it even worse for her, we, the audience, get to see that what she is witnessing is actually happening, but everybody else is missing it. So it was. I just thought it was a really interesting way to sort of visualize what that experience is of being, you know, really questioning your own sanity in the midst of being, traumatized emotionally.
And the distancing, I feel, as well. Like, he was very good at keeping her and breaking down her relationship so that she was isolated. And he continued to do that in causing these things to happen that would make her surroundings and her people question her, and taking them out one by one almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was shocking. It was interesting because it was understandable that nobody believed her when she told them that Adrian was somehow haunting her from the grave, so to speak. But then all these things started to happen, and that's interesting you mentioned that, Kat, how he's sort of picking off everybody that she cares about one by one, do you know what I mean? And it's obviously the first most shocking thing that happened was her sister gets her throat cut. That was the one where we're just like, oh, this is getting real now, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
When the initially I was like, oh, the knife is floating in the middle of the table. This is great because now the sister is seeing what's happening and she's going to believe her. But
yeah, exactly. It sets it up. It gives you just enough time as an audience to register that. So you go, oh, great. And then take that away from you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I was talking about the pacing initially. I thought that it, you know, it didn't move too fast, but it did let you know that it was going to get intense, and you got a little bit of backstory, and it was pretty, pretty good. And then right when that scene happened, it was like, oh, it's going down. This is happening now. So yeah. I thought that was a very interesting scene. And just the fact that I think she was sort of standing there with the knife in her hand, looking at it in disbelief, kind of trying to process what had just happened. I'm wondering if he was sort of standing there forcing her to keep it held in her hand just until she got caught.
Oh, see, I took it as, like, she was just in such shock that this could actually have occurred out in public. Like, and I feel like I saw the sister see the knife before her throat was slit, so it was almost like, I'm going to let her know that you're right, but she's not going to survive to support you.
Yeah, and I think that that's when Elizabeth Moss really turns it up a notch with her character's sort of inner turmoil, because not only is she going through this ridiculousness, but now she's grieving the loss of the closest person to her. So maybe she did temporarily go a bit crazy after that, because how could anybody, you know, I couldn't even fathom going through something so ridiculous. Anyway.
Actually, I mean, there's one more thing I thought was interesting with the ending, when he still, like, he presents himself as a victim, how that's a common trait in narcissism personality disorder, which they made use of in the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that the ending was very interesting, because you sort of see some personalities come to play. Like, Cecilia kind of comes back to who she probably was before she even met Adrian, which is the more strong professional woman, and she knows everything that's going on, and I think she's got a leg up now. She's got a bit more power, so she is able to confront her abuser, so to speak. And she's got that secret, right? She's got the suit hidden in the other room that he doesn't know about. So I thought, the last scene was incredible.
It was almost like she hid it in the same place where she hid her escape. And now she's kind of hid her salvation and her strength as well. Because she put all of her stuff in there to leave. But then she also put the thing that ended up helping her in the end in the same hiding spot.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. That's actually a really interesting observation.
Mm-hmm. I loved... Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to comment on the fact that Cecilia was actually such a smart woman, just with the planning and executing of the escape at the beginning, but then also being able to, on multiple occasions, fight off this man who is attacking her, this invisible guy. Like, it's really unbelievable to think about the fact that she was able to get out of half of those situations, and then how she was able to sort of figure out... the next step, and how is she going to make people believe her? And then at the end, you know, coming up with this scheme to expose him and get rid of him. She knew where all those cameras were. Like, she must have studied that place for months and months before she escaped, because she knew it inside and out, and she knew how she could use it to her advantage.
Yeah, exactly. She might have been isolated there by her abuser and would probably have had nothing to do but walk around the house and look around. I think it also speaks to her strength as a survivor of abuse, because a lot of time gaslighting and, like, emotional abuse and that kind of manipulation and isolation will really break you down mentally. But she, throughout, trusted her gut. Like, I thought a few times through the movie, I'm like, you know what, maybe I would have just been like, you know what, I am crazy. Like, this is just another issue that I'm having. But she stuck to her knowing, and she kind of always knew when he was in the room, because he had that much of an intimidating presence in real life as he did when he was unseen, which speaks, I think, really well to that. Like, he was able to still be intimidating, and that speaks to her acting, but... to know that she still had that sense of, like, I'm in danger, and just trusting that gut instinct.
Well, that's also why it works in terms of, like, exploring the concept of PTSD, because for people who have experienced trauma, it's like, to them, it's still present, it's still there. But nobody else can see it, which was a really interesting, because one of the other things that's interesting is, in terms of the original book, it's very different from the original book. So it was interesting, because the original book is about the guy who is invisible, but the whole taking it in the realm of like a domestic abuse scenario is a very different spin on the original book. And so it's interesting that they chose that to be the path that it takes, and which I found really interesting as a way to explore abuse and post-traumatic stress. It was just visually, it complemented that theme well.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to see her go through all the different motions of that.
Made me question, when she was placed in the psychiatric facility, just how we deal with people who are going through, like you said, PTSD. It's kind of like, you're crazy, this is it, you're going into lockup, and we're not going to listen or hear you, we're just going to, like, they had to, because she was actually, by that time, as Julie had probably mentioned, already going a little crazy, but just medicating her and leaving her alone in a room and not really following up kind of hit me in a way that seems real in present day.
Mm-hmm. So here's the ultimate question. Was it Adrian or was it Tom? And I'd love to just chat about the addition of Tom into the storyline and what you guys think about that question.
Yeah, that's a really interesting. Yeah, because I was thinking about that too. I suspect it was mostly. So Adrian was her husband, correct?
Yeah.
And Tom was the brother. Okay, yeah. So I suspect it was Adrian. And then to get out of it, because there was the whole twist of he was in the basement. I suspect that he had planned this the whole time to be found later in the basement and have Tom get killed so that he could then come out and present himself as being the victim.
Yeah, I thought about it. There was a few moments where it almost was like, oh, is this kind of like what happened? But knowing his pattern of abuse and manipulation, I really stuck to the fact that, like, you know, maybe he was. I mean, his brother had mentioned a few times that he had been under his brother's thumb as well. So maybe that had something to do with why he may have helped Adrian. But I think it really solidified it for me in the end. And I know it's probably just silly Hollywood stuff that I'm falling for. But when he spoke to her and kind of put his hand on her leg and said, like, the word surprise, which had been through the movie, I was like, nope, it was him. It was
exactly. Yeah, I'm struggling with if it was Adrian pulling the strings all along, or if Adrian and Tom were sort of in it together. Like, I think obviously they were in it together to some aspect, because Tom had to deal with all of the will and meeting with Cecilia and all that kind of stuff. But I definitely think that Adrian was the main total manipulator. That's the best word you could use, Kat. He was the main manipulator, and I think that he probably got Tom in on it as well. He did mention, though, initially that he was under his brother's thumb, and then he was, I don't know if he said something nasty about his character or something like that. Like, I don't know if he hated him or something like that. But yeah, I'm just curious to know what happened behind the scenes between the two of them and how it was worked out. I mean, I'm sure it was Adrian pretending to be the victim all along is like the ultimate manipulation, and the biggest way that he could try to screw Cecilia over and mess with her mind that much to the point where, like, she would want to come back and be like, oh wait, like, it was actually not you, and da da da. Anyway, and then all talking about manipulation, the fact that she was pregnant. Like, we haven't talked about that. You know, she thought she had one up on him because he wanted her to have his baby, but she was like, no, I'm not getting tied to you for life. Do you know what I mean? So she was taking the pill, but then he somehow knew and was replacing the pill with something else. So she did actually get pregnant.
And that's another classic move for abusers to kind of solidify the bond between them and the one that they're abusing too, is that people have gotten pregnant accidentally or not knowing, but on purpose from their abuser to keep that connection. So that was another good kind of like comment on the abuse as well, that that's how total it was, that he was even controlling her body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I think it was Adrian, just in terms of that idea of someone who's a manipulator. And they do, in cases that you hear about where someone has reported an abuser, that person who is the abuser is sometimes able to get off the hook because they're able to spin the story in a way that makes them look like they were victimized.
Yeah.
Okay, do you guys... Sorry, go ahead.
No, it was just so good, and you were right about, like, the cinematography aspect. That's not something I'm well-versed in, but it was really shot beautifully. I had a problem with the ending, though. I don't know if we'll get into that, but...
Talk to me about the ending. What did you feel?
Well, I understood that she needed to kind of, like, claim her safety and that she would never feel safe if he was around, because clearly he's almost feels above the law in some way, but I don't like that she killed him.
Oh, I liked it. Oh, that's interesting. Sorry. Like, go ahead.
No. Like, I feel like that it was justified, and I feel that it was something that might occur and was, like, a real thing that could happen. But it almost made me feel like she could have done it in a way that was, like, that made her above him, you know? Like, he was the killer. She was the survivor. But I get it also.
I personally liked how she basically used his own trick against him with the knife and making it look like he killed himself on camera. I actually found it a very satisfying conclusion to the movie.
It was satisfying. Like, I feel like it's almost like an internal struggle that I'm having, because I'm like, yes, like, you got revenge for your sister, you got revenge for yourself, and you made it so that you won't get in trouble for this at all. But now I feel like you also have to carry that responsibility of killing someone on your conscience. Maybe I'm going too deep in for a movie, because I'm like, but now you're a killer too. And kind of putting that responsibility on her friend to say, like, yeah, you're a cop. Like, this was an accident. He did it himself. What did it sound like to you? And he supported her, but at the same time, you're now putting him in a bad position. But honestly, I probably would have killed him too, so I don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I'm with Nathaniel here. I think it was very cool that she used the same thing against him, not just the suit, but also basically exactly what he did to her sister. It was the ultimate revenge, and it's really the only way she's going to get complete closure, even though, you know, mentally and emotionally, she's going to be really screwed up after this in general. I don't think she would ever be able to get over it if he's just rotting in jail. Like, he's still around. He could still get out, for example, you know?
Exactly. And that's why I'm okay with it, because I'm like, she would have really never felt safe again. Like, I don't know how you could after such an incident.
Oh, well, and in fact, he wouldn't even be rotting in jail because he's the innocent one, right? Like, it was his brother. So that's what the police think.
I didn't think about that. He would have used that to get out of it.
Yeah, like, she was sitting in the police station after everything went down with James, I believe his name is, and he was trying to convince her, like, it's over, it was Tom, it wasn't Adrian, or whatever you want to say. So, there really, unfortunately, didn't seem to be any other option but to kind of just get rid of him.
True.
And even, like, for the rest of the movie, he's assumed, or for a good chunk of the movie, he's assumed to be dead already. So it's like, yeah, I mean, going back to your point, him being in jail, would that really... The notion that he's still alive wouldn't necessarily, even if he is in jail, wouldn't necessarily give her that closure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, one thing that I thought was particularly strong about the movie was the use of the wider aspect ratio. I always find that interesting. So I'm a filmmaker, and my background, I'm looking at it from a filmmaking perspective. And the reason I liked it was how it was used to build suspense. And there's many instances where it just cuts to an empty frame and there's nobody in the frame, but it's really terrifying because I think the reason it works is because there's already been the idea planted in your mind that there's somebody there and you can't see him. So your eye is scanning the frame and looking for something to have moved or out of place. Or there's one scene where she's in the house and she's hanging up a coat, and then it just pans over to a window and it just sits there and you watch it, and then it pans back to her. And it's one of those things where it's completely unmotivated, but it's tipping off to you, the audience, that something has changed in the scene. Even if physically in the set nothing has actually changed, you and the audience have now been clued into thinking something, I'm now supposed to pay attention to something, and you're looking for it. Anyway, I just thought that was, in terms of building suspense, it was a really, really effective use of the space. And that's a very, I think that's a very difficult thing to achieve from a filmmaking perspective.
Yeah, that's so fascinating that you point that out. And you're right, because I remember sitting there thinking, like, is he here in this scene or not? Do you know what I mean? Like, are we going to find out? Because in some scenes, we didn't find out if he was there or not. And it really, I found myself really feeling that physical suspense just sitting there. And it wasn't even necessarily one of the really intense scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. It was scanning everything, like mm-hmm. every single scene. I was trying to find him before, or like find a hint about him and everything.
And the other thing is, it's the kind of thing where it could have been overdone, but they found a good balance for it where it wasn't like, because if it had been overdone, it would just be, you'd be going, okay, well, now I'm just bored looking at nothing. But there was, or if it wasn't done enough, you may have not been given enough clues, but it was just the right balance where you were able to really invest in looking for all those details.
I wonder if there's anything more behind, and I'm just sort of, you know, talking as I'm thinking about it, but obviously Adrian was super rich by whatever technology company he worked at, but there was something interesting about the sort of cold and vast spaces in his home in comparison to the more claustrophobic spaces in James's home. And even though, you know, I keep thinking back to the kitchen as well, you know, the kitchen where there is that wide shot when the stove sets on fire, and then that's where the first fight scene happens between Cecilia and the Invisible Man. So I'm just all of a sudden thinking about the differences between those spaces.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, as you were saying that, another thing that I thought about was how their bedroom has windows everywhere. So it's like from here, he's like in his tower and he can see everything.
Hmm.
And the house that she goes to after he's supposedly died does feel a lot tighter. Yeah. Interesting.
And then even in the attic as well, right? Which is sort of the one of the first. Yeah, the attic was intense. And with the phone, and she finds the knife, which, you know, now that I think more about it, was probably planted there intentionally for her to find it. I'm not sure. But then obviously one of the sort of scenes, I think you see it in the trailer, but where she throws the paint on him on the stairs. Mm-hmm. And that was, yeah, again, like kind of a claustrophobic space.
Uh-huh.
Very Kim and Kanye, that compound. Getting Kanye vibes. But it was, yeah, it was cold. It was calculated. Everything was in its specific spot. And just, I imagine how he would have controlled her.
Well, he had control over everything when you think about it, not just Cecilia, but the dog, you know, having the, is it called a shock collar? He's got... alarms on his car. He's got these incredible walls around his home that she has to scale. Do you know what I mean? Everything. And, you know, he's right at the ocean. So everything just seems so vast.
Mm-hmm. And secluded at the same time.
Yeah. Interesting how you can feel both of those ways about something like that.
And yet his security code is the day that they met.
Romantic.
Right. It just is just so crazy, the amount of like power and control that people have, like, or mm-hmm. their sense of what love is, even, like, I don't know. I'm glad he's gone.
Thanks, Cecilia, for saving us all.
Yeah. You did good. What happened to the dog? Did she take the dog?
Good question. I don't know.
I think the dog's okay.
It owns the house now.
Yeah.
That's funny. Okay, I think this is a really good time to screen it or skip it. So, Invisible Man, screen it or skip it, guys.
Screen it.
Yep, screen it.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to see it. It was really good. And even coming from somebody who doesn't do much horror, it was really good. And, you know, it's a lot more than just a typical horror film. It's not like some teen slasher that has no storyline. It's really well written and cinematically really awesome. Elizabeth Moss is just a killer, literally, but but she's just brilliant. So I feel like I have to see everything that she was in. And speaking of Elizabeth Moss again, I'm just going to gush about her more. I keep thinking back to her in Girl Interrupted, and she just had this like minor side role, but even then, like, she was so good and she's just blossomed. Anyway, so yes,
she's had quite the career.
She really has. Wasn't she in oh geez, it was something, Escape to Witch Mountain or something with Eric Von Detten. Tell me I'm not crazy.
I did not see that.
I didn't watch it. I don't know.
I'm going to IMDb her after this. Awesome. Thank you guys so much for chatting with me about Invisible Man. So coming up on the podcast, Steve is going to be starting a series called Comfort Films, sort of films that we watch to bring us up. So look forward to that in the coming weeks. Thank you guys again for chatting with me, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's always fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks.